This is 105 Drive.
I'm pleased to chat to Ian Miller, who is a new signing from Cambridge United. Good afternoon.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you? Tired, I presume?
It's been another long day, but all part and parcel of pre-season training, really.
You're doing double sessions at the moment?
Kind of triple sessions at the moment. The gaffer's been ideal, really, because we've had the balls out for the last week. So we did that this morning, then went to the gym and finish off in the pool. It's a good way to finish the day off.
All right, OK. So you're a new signing for Cambridge United. You signed, was it beginning of last month, June?
That's correct, yeah.
And you'd previously been at clubs including Bury Town, Ipswich, Darlington, and most recently Grimsby. Why did you decide to come to Cambridge United?
I think there was a lot of factors kind of that made me sway towards coming back to Cambridge. My wife's family are from the area, obviously, as you said. I played locally with Bury Town. But I think Cambridge United is a football club that are trying to do things in the correct manner, with the correct, the correct ethics, with regarding to not forking out massive amounts of money, which teams try and do in this league, with unsuccessfully, by breeding a good youth setup, good fan base, and a good all round family club, really.
As a player that was playing for Grimsby last season, you would have faced Cambridge United at some point. What did you think of them from last season, and was that a factor in why you decided to come to them? You think they'll do well this season?
I definitely wouldn't have signed for a football club that had no ambition in progressing out of this football, out of this league. As you said, I played against them last year, and I've spoken to Greg on a number of occasions. And they were a young team with a lot of ability, a lot of kind of, youthfulness. And I think they were just kind of, missing some experience in certain parts of the pitch. And I think, Richard and Jez, throughout the summer have made good additions to the squad, which is already a good squad.
Yeah.
And hopefully made it an even better squad for us, throughout this season.
You said that the club have made quite a few new signings, and I suppose that helps you as well as being one of those. You're not the only new person to the club. So what's it been like settling in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think, with the job that you're in, it kind of comes with the territory of you have to kind of get used to going into unknown circumstances and training with boys that you've never really, played alongside before. So that comes part and parcel, really, of your job. But it's made easier because we're all wanting to be successful, and we're all pulling in the same direction. So our goals are all the same.
Yeah. Is there anybody at the club now that you've played with previously, or that you know through any other sort of links before?
I played with Greg Taylor, who's a new signing when I was at Darlington.
Right.
I played with him there, and it's funny because you come across players all the time. So even the likes of Cunnington, and then even the likes of last year playing against Big Tom Elliott, players like that, you kind of remember for obvious reasons. So, they were a good side last year, but just lacking the cutting edge in certain areas and unfortunate not to see out games and pick up 3 points when maybe they should have done.
There's a lot of former big-name clubs in the lower leagues these days, particularly in the non-league. I'm thinking of the likes of Lincoln and Luton and Wrexham, as well as Cambridge. What do you make of the league? Is it tougher than it ever has been?
I've always said this league is tougher than certainly League Two, with the whole one goes up automatically and then one team fights for a playoff spot. But as you said, the likes of Luton, who previously have thrown a lot of money at trying to go up.
Yeah.
Wrexham were there or thereabouts last year. You have unknown quantities of teams like Forest Green and Kidderminster who have done well in the past and made some good signings. So I think it's the sort of league, and that, even if you look at the teams that are newly promoted, they've got that wing mentality. So they're going to bring that through to this season. And, even though they're in the lower leagues like Chester, they won't fear anyone in this league.
But there is a reason why some of these teams are as low as they are, and that's because of the financial situation that's gone on in football in the last few years. And I know that you were part of that with Darlington when you were there when they went into administration a couple of years ago. What was that like?
yeah, that was a big low point for myself in my career. You know, the first time that I went through it with Darlington, we were flying in League Two towards the top of the league, and the chairman just decided to pull the plug. And you know, in that sort of situation, you know, I didn't see a penny for 5 months from the football club, which, you know, takes it out of, you know, as much as you enjoy going and training every day, to realise that you're not going to get paid, and you've, you know, you've got bills, you've got mortgages to pay, just like everyone else.
Yeah.
That's difficult, as much as you know, you try and work around it. And then obviously the last time I was at Darlington just before I went out, you know, similar sort of thing. The chairman asked players to take wage cuts, and it kind of spiralised into going back into administration. So I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Mm. That's one of the low points of your career. As I'm going to ask you about your highlights of career, which I'm mentioning is the time that you played at Wembley last season for Grimsby. But I guess that was bittersweet because you didn't actually win the FA Trophy versus Wrexham. But it must have been a highlight to have played at Wembley in the first place.
Yeah, I think my highlight would have been when I played there two seasons prior at Wembley in the FA Trophy final for Darlington against Mansfield, and as captain led the team to victory. So, you know, that would be a highlight, and Wembley's the sort of stadium and the sort of stage that, you know, you could never get bored of playing at.
Yeah.
But, you know, other little stuff like playing my league debut at Ipswich Town, stuff like that you don't forget.
Mm.
And hopefully there's players at Cambridge United that have got the ability to make Football League appearances. So, you know, hopefully this season we can put in good performances, and that can warrant them seeing them realise next season.
What are you most looking forward to about this season with Cambridge United?
It's a fresh challenge for myself, and I truly think that the squad that's been put together, we've got strength and depth which you need in this division, and I can obviously see us, you know, putting up good performances against any team. I don't think we should fear anybody. I think we've got as good as ability as anyone else. I think the coaching and the training sessions that, you know, I've witnessed in the last 3 weeks is as good as any as which I've received, and I know other boys have mentioned the same.
Mm.
So I think it's important to get off to a good start, and that will hopefully snowball into a good season.
Are there any particular fixtures that you're most looking forward to? I guess playing Grimsby again next season will be one of them.
Yeah, you know, obviously I played there for 18 months, but I'll see that as another 90 minutes. I think from a fan's point of view, I think, you know, when you're playing Luton on bank holiday, that will be a tasty affair.
Mm.
But any game's going to be enjoyable that we perform well and win.
Yes.
You know, there's no point getting all hyped up if the game's on, you know, television and not performing and you know, losing.
Yeah.
Might as well have not played at all. So I think if we just take it one step at a time, and it's cliche, but the league's not going to be won in August or September or October. It's not going to be won then. So we just need to make sure that we all stay fit and peak performance.
Yeah.
I'm sure that we can give a good account of ourselves.
I think, as you say, it's consistency is the key. I think Cambridge United started really well last season but tailed off towards the end, and I guess that was their downfall in the end, sort of finishing mid-table, so consistency is the key for that. What I wanted to mention to you just quickly is the pre-season friendly. Well, you've got many pre-season friendlies coming up, but the one that stands out is the one that's been recently announced against Norwich. Now, I'm aware that you obviously were signed to Ipswich, so there's an Ipswich-Norwich connection there. Personally, I'm a Norwich fan. So are you looking forward to playing Norwich at the Abbey?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a team, you always, and as a professional, you always want to play against the better players and the bigger teams. And whether Norwich bring a strong 11 or, you know, kind of mix that in with the youth team, I think it's a good opportunity for us to pit our wits against a better side.
Mm.
And you know, you normally find in pre-season fixtures the bigger clubs don't really like coming to lower league teams because they're quite happy playing on their perfect pitches.
Yeah.
In front of packed out stadiums week in, week out. And you know, on the flip side, that's where we need to be, right, you know, Braintree away on a Tuesday night. That's where the league will be won and promotion will be gained at clubs like that.
Mm.
So it's not just the pretty stuff, and you know, fully packed Loftus Road or, you know, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't work like that.
Do you have a team that you support outside of the ones that you play for?
Myself and my dad and my brother used to go and watch Colchester as a boy.
Okay.
You know, I'm Colchester born and bred, so you know, I don't really follow many Premier League teams, and I always look out for the Colchester's results.
Mm, okay. All right. Well, we look forward to seeing you at the Norwich friendly, because Cambridge 105 are going to be there broadcasting live, and we'll be commentating on the game as well. So hopefully we get a chance to meet you in person and have a chat with you after the game as well.
I definitely won't. I won't be talking to you if you've got Norwich stuff on. No, you don't.
I was going to say fingers crossed that Norwich win, but I shouldn't say that to a Cambridge United player. But I hope it's a good game anyway. I'm sure it will be.
I'm sure it will be.
Thanks a lot, Ian, for chatting to me.
Cheers,
bye. Bye-bye. That's Ian Miller from Cambridge United. I shouldn't have said I was a Norwich fan, should I? Cambridge 105 will be broadcasting live from the Abbey on Wednesday the 31st of July. That's the date of the Norwich friendly. And that's going to be part of a brand new programme that we're going to be bringing you from the Abbey Stadium for every Cambridge United home game. So from the 10th of August, when Cambridge United play host to Halifax Town, Chris Duerden will be leading our brand new sports team, be presenting a brand new show from 4 o'clock till 6 o'clock every Saturday afternoon. And on a home game, the show will come live from Cambridge United, and on an away game, we'll be here in our Gwydir Street studio. So Cambridge 105, we're bringing you match commentary of the Cambridge United versus Norwich City friendly on Wednesday the 31st of July in the evening, and then we won't be doing commentary on all the games throughout the season. There may be some few more, but mainly we'll be there after the game interviewing the players, the manager, and bringing you all the results from all the local teams, as well as keeping an eye on the national football scene as well. So it's a brand new football show starting on the 10th of August from 4 o'clock here on Cambridge 105. And thanks again to Ian Miller for chatting to me. Two weekends ago, Cambridge played host to the Cambridge Buskers Festival. And many of musicians from the local area took to the streets and played across Friday, Saturday and Sunday. It was a weekend before last. And we have the joint winners of the competition that they were holding in the studio. It's Ain't Misbehaving, a.k.a. Nigel and Jules. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi.
How are you?
We're good.
Very, very good.
Good. Are you enjoying the lovely weather?
Yeah, it's a shame it wasn't like that on the first Friday of the Busking Festival. Yeah. But
yes, yes, it was about a week too early, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was fine. It was great the other 2 days as well.
Okay, so you took part in all 3 days?
We took part in 2 days.
Okay. Yeah. So they were the Friday and
the Sunday.
And the Sunday, yeah. Okay, all right. So for people who don't know much about the Buskers Festival, I've just given a brief outline of it there, but just explain to us exactly what it is.
Well, it's now the premier Buskers Festival, I think, in the country.
Oh, right.
I think it's been running 5 years this year,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
No doubt, if Heather's listening, she'll correct
you
by email.
Yes.
We've done it for four years. It's just a fantastic get-together for street entertainers. And it's not just for local musicians, performers.
Mm.
Some of these guys come in from a long way away.
Yeah, it really is an international sort of event,
okay.
Which is what's great.
Yeah.
And I think we all missed it last year because it took a break just because of the Olympics. Mm. So it was really great to have it back. And I understand that they had record numbers performing this year, so that was good.
Yeah. All right. So you don't have to be a local act to take part in it then?
No. Okay. But you do have to play in Cambridge.
Yeah. So Cambridge is quite unique, I think, in the way that it allows people to busk without a licence, generally speaking, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Very much. Yeah.
So that's obviously good, and that's where this has come out from. It's encouraging people to go out and busk.
Yep.
So where did you get the chance to play? Where were your locations?
This year, we started off... We were quite lucky, because on the Friday, we were undercover for our first one. We were in the Grafton Centre.
But we still got wet.
That's quite a unique place to play anyway, because you're not allowed to play there normally.
No.
That's one of the only places you're not allowed to play.
Not everybody
so
liked
nice.
It in there, to be honest.
Okay.
No, the majority did. There was only one wanted us to sort of move away from
noise.
The shopfront. But it was good.
Yeah.
Although, yes, we did get rained on, because the water was coming in at the Grafton. Couldn't get away from it.
Yeah.
And then we played outside the Guildhall, but luckily, because
spot.
They wanted to televise that, they gave us a marquee, so we stayed dry. But on the Sunday, we performed, we did three lots of our sets, and that was down Mill Road, so it was great. We actually, this is the first year that they've really encompassed Mill Road into it, and that was really fabulous, because we played along here before for things like the Winter Fair.
Mm.
So, yeah, that was good.
Did you find a difference in the audiences where you went? Obviously, Mill Road and the centre of town are quite different sorts of places.
The centre of town is more tourist-based, obviously, and then this is obviously more people, more residential, up here. And it's interesting, the tourists... especially when we were being filmed, it's interesting how as soon as the sight of a TV camera appears, you know, all of a sudden you've got this wonderful audience. Yeah,
yeah. But it's quite good for us because they all feel the need that if they put money in the hat, they'll get televised. So that's fine.
They get televised doing their good deed.
Exactly.
But I have to say that Mill Road, it was really nice. We'd got people actually coming up and talking to us, not just, you know, putting the money in, but actually giving us feedback and saying how much they were enjoying it and asking if they could send, you know, take photos and send photos. It was good. It was good.
So how does the competition work then?
Well, basically, you can play up to the 3 days.
Yeah.
And all the performers have a card with the name of their act on it. And through the City Council and Heather Bevan-Hunt, who organises all of this, this year it was the first time you could vote online.
Okay.
So literally, it's members of the public that see you, spot your name, and then they vote online for the acts that they like the best. So
brilliant.
We were particularly chuffed that there were more performers than ever this year. And it was joint winners. We have to give a shout-out to Fred's House.
That was my other question. Was it literally just a dead heat on votes?
It was, apparently we got exactly the same number of votes. So a shout-out to them.
Yeah.
And it's a nice mix because I know it's radio and I don't have to give this away, but Fred's House obviously are quite a young young band and you kind of expect it. So we're out there for the old fogies. So.
Fair enough.
Fogie, thank you.
So that's obviously the greatest accolade you can get, is that somebody not only takes the time to go online and vote, but they remember who you are as well.
Absolutely,
So that's really good.
It was a surprise when we had the notification. Heather emailed us.
Yeah.
And I read it. And I went, oh, Fred's House. Oh, yeah, well done. No, Fred and us. And I still had to read it about 3 or 4 times, didn't I?
Yeah.
And then you had to come along and read it again. Yeah, we have done it.
Really
yeah.
chuffed, though. Really, it does mean something. It really does.
It does, very much.
Did you get an opportunity to play at the Big Weekend because of this?
No,
because the Big Weekend, they have different categories of winners for the Buskers Festival.
All I saw was there was a slot for the winners of the Buskers Festival.
Yeah, and that was the young musician, because there's a category for young players.
Right.
And there was a young lad called Tom Roddis, who's only 11.
Okay.
Full of confidence.
And, fabulous. So he got a chance to play there. But part of our prize was that we, apart from the fact we get free weekend tickets to the Cambridge Folk Festival, and we get a chance to play there as well.
Oh, that's
so to play around like the club. They've asked if we'll play at the club tents and things and do some of our sets.
Have you been to the Folk Festival as punters before?
We have, but about 15 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's changed quite a bit in the last few years.
Very much so.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's something to look forward to, isn't it? Yeah.
Plus, we also got free tickets for the Cambridge Rock Festival, but we happen to be playing there anyway.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which is
Well, we broadcast from there every year. So where are you? Are you doing the acoustic stage?
Yeah, that'll be our fourth year this year.
On a Sunday.
On a Sunday,
okay. Yeah, about 6:30, I think.
All right. Oh, we may well see you there.
Yeah, hope so.
It's funny, most of the acts that I've had come in here saying we're playing the Cambridge Rock Festival are all playing the acoustic stage. I don't know anybody that's playing one of the main stages.
It's
actually a rock act at the moment, which is funny, but there we go. All right, well, you're going to do a couple of songs for us.
Yeah,
we'll get you to do one now, and then I'll ask you a bit more about you guys and your music in general afterwards.
Yeah, sure.
So what would you like to do for us first?
Okay, we're going
to
start with one that's self-penned.
Okay.
And this is a song called Adrenaline Rush that, surprisingly enough, is a love song. And it's really talking about the fact that you don't need outside stimuli like drink and other things to give you an adrenaline rush, that love can do it.
Touch the sky, 'cause all I need I don't want to take a roller coaster ride and have a sports car for a head and drive. Don't want to ride on that wall of death, and I don't want hot coals for me to tread, cause all I need is you. All I want is you. All I need is you. Need you, want you too.
It's Eight Misbehaving on Cambridge 105, a track called Adrenaline Rush. So let's find out a bit more about you guys. You two are from, or live in Huntingdon, is that right?
Near Ramsey, a village called Wistow.
Okay, so is, sort of the other side of Huntingdon, more towards Peterborough direction,
yeah,
really.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. So how long have you been performing as Eight Misbehaving?
6 years?
About 6 years in this form as Eight Misbehaving.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, we've been performing together and separately for a number of years that probably best not to mention, but a lot of years. But
okay, all right. Are you a couple?
We are.
We are.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good. I'm glad you said yes. It would have been awkward if you said no.
We can say no if you like.
I will avoid the question of how did you meet? So what was it that you were both musicians when you met each other before, and that's how you came to perform together?
Yeah.
We were
young when we met.
We actually met at art school.
Yeah.
Okay.
A long time ago. But I was playing anyway in the college club. And it just went from there.
Yeah.
And you were doing things, weren't you?
I was doing things with friends, doing a lot of harmony work and stuff as well with groups. But, we just started playing together, and it all happened, really, didn't it? It all came together. I did, strangely enough, about 10 years ago, I completely lost my nerve. Haven't got a clue why. We'll never know why, I don't think.
To perform in front of an audience.
Yeah, just got up one day and I still, to this day, I don't get nervous, really. So don't understand what happened, but just stood up, opened my mouth and nothing would come out. And we tried and tried and nothing. So for about 4 years, I wouldn't perform at all.
Yeah, so I just went out on my own.
And then suddenly it all came back. So.
Okay.
Yeah, with a rush, with a vengeance.
Did that happen while you were about to perform? Or
we were actually on stage.
Wow.
And I could, luckily, Nigel knows enough stuff that he could just carry on and do his own thing.
Yeah.
But funnily enough, where it came back was I kept trying to go to things like open mic nights and that to get my confidence back. And it was a similar thing one day. We were there, opened my mouth, sort of like the proverbial frightened rabbit,
yeah.
And a little bit of a came out. And tried that about two or three times. Then Nigel just put his guitar down, and somehow I opened my mouth and this voice came out again. So you had to quickly scrabble around, pick the guitar up, and haven't stopped since. Can't shut me up now.
Wow. Yeah. And so those 4 years, you must have been quite frustrated, because I guess you wanted to perform.
Oh, so much. And I didn't understand what the block was. And I still don't. Don't know what happened.
Well, I hope it doesn't happen again.
Absolutely.
Well, certainly not here. I'm feeling okay.
Yeah,
especially as I'm going to be singing the next one. So yeah.
So what was it that got you to form Eight Misbehaving then?
We realised, I suppose, that we liked sort of jazzy, bluesy type stuff.
The stuff you were doing before was a different sort of music.
Whilst Jules couldn't sing, I was obviously out on my own. And although there was quite a lot of jazz influences, like a lot of the old Django Reinhardt stuff, you know, the French gypsy jazz stuff. So I was doing some of that.
Yeah.
Plus still writing my own stuff as well, plus doing a few covers. But I got more into sort of big bands and Ella Fitzgerald and things like that, and Jules picked up on it as well. So we started performing some of that stuff. Strangely enough, we've taken the name from that particular song, Ain't Misbehaving. But one of the songs that we rarely do now is Ain't Misbehaving.
Yeah, we'll have to start doing it a bit more. But we're not going to do it today.
No.
Okay, all right. So what sort of other sort of gigs have you played in your 6 years together, other than sort of busking stuff? Where are
almost anything and everything, really.
Where are the most regular places that you would play?
Well, we have a residency at a place called Mama Liz's. Not going to be so well known for Cambridge because it's in Staverford, but it's like a premier music venue there.
Okay.
So we do a monthly session there. We did one yesterday. We range from playing in hotels and being a function duo, if you like. We do weddings.
Yeah.
This time of year, we've got a lot of festivals coming up that we play at. But we do perform in pubs, clubs, you name it.
Anywhere
we'll give it a go.
Exactly.
And I think in the next 2 weeks, we worked out we've got about 10 gigs. So it can be quite busy.
And unfortunately, none of them in Cambridge.
Okay.
Apart from the folk festival.
So whereabouts would you play more regularly? Around where you live, or do you tend to play quite
we
far
play
afield?
A lot, strangely enough, we play a lot in Lincolnshire.
Yeah.
Okay.
A great deal in Lincolnshire. Although, saying that, we seem to play everywhere but Cambridge.
Yeah. But you play all around the country or a certain radius away from here?
We've played everywhere from, was it Birmingham, I think, is in the north, down to the south of France. So.
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite south.
a little bit south.
A little bit further and you get wet.
How did the south of France come about? Was that, you specifically invited to play there, or were you on holiday at the time?
It was a festival that we went to. As Nigel has already said, he's a real fan of Django Reinhardt.
Oh, okay.
And they have a yearly festival in a place called Samoa, which is an island actually on the Seine.
It's near Fontainebleau.
And it was when we were going there that we were asked if we'd do a few songs there, and that was a big compliment to be able to play
there. Terrific.
Okay.
Yeah,
fab.
Absolutely superb.
And do you have your own groups of fans in these locations that you
strangely
play regularly?
Enough, yes, we do.
You say strangely enough.
Well, no, not. But it was nice yesterday because this residency that Jules was saying that we've got up in Stamford, it's called the Sunday Session, and it's basically from 4 till 6 on a Sunday afternoon. And we thought yesterday, Andy Murray's playing finals. We're going to have nobody going to turn up. No, we're going to be playing to the bar staff.
Yeah.
You know? But thankfully, the diehards came out.
Yep.
You know, there was somebody sitting at the back with their, you know, with their iPhone.
Yeah.
You know,
which is fine. We asked them to keep us
Told us the result. But it's really nice that everybody turned out.
So we get good
plus
following
new faces
on,
too.
Yeah,
which is
and we got following on Facebook, and we've got our own website as well, and we tend to get quite a lot of interest through that. So it's really good.
When you do play Cambridge, where have you played before?
We played Darry's.
Yeah, done that a couple of times.
Done that a couple of times.
Hope Street.
Yes.
And also the we've done the Winter Fair as well.
On Mill Road,
we played at Romsey.
Oh, the Labour Club.
Labour Club as
well. Yeah, I forgot that one.
Yeah. And the Guildhall. We've done a couple of sessions in the Guildhall.
So we actually done more than I thought.
Yeah. Just don't play very regularly, you forget about them.
Yeah, well, it's a senior moment, I'm afraid. It's the grey cells going. Yeah.
All right. Have you got, you say you've got a website, have you got any of your stuff recorded that people can buy CDs or download?
No, that's
stuff?
What we're doing next, because we've been really sort of, I think because we haven't realised that people do keep asking for our music.
Yeah, as a demand.
And there really has been this year, so we are going to knuckle down and try and get it ready for when we're at the Cambridge Rock Festival.
We've not got too much longer then. That's
No, it's only a couple of weeks away.
We'll knuckle down and we'll do it as a live recording, because stuff works out better that way for us,
We've had a few people saying that when you do get your CD together, I hope it's not going to be covered all these overdubs, and I hope it's not going to sound really glossy, you know.
So we said, no, we're going to do it as we are.
Yeah, I guess people want to hear on a CD what they would hear if they went to see
you. That's dead right.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right, you said you were going to sing this one, so what's this next one you're doing?
So we're going to do a cover, but this is our version of Summertime, because we haven't had a lot of opportunity to perform that this year. We've been singing Stormy Weather quite a lot through the summer.
Yeah.
But we thought now at last we can get this song out. So this is our version, our arrangement of Summertime.
This is rather different.
Summertime. Thank you.
Very good. So, do you have another date booked in Cambridge other than the Rock Festival?
We're going to be at the Folk Festival. On the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
That's fine, Rock Festival and Folk Festival. So when is the Rock Festival's first?
No, the Folk Festival's first.
That's the last weekend in July.
Oh, okay, so they're back to back.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then the first weekend in August is the Rock Festival.
Okay.
But also we were somewhere else we played at, which was the Cambike Fest a few weeks ago. That was only about three or four weeks ago.
Yes.
Yeah, memories going, you see.
Totally.
Was that
the one in Milton?
That was right, in Milton Country Park.
Yeah, yeah.
And people from the Cambridge Folk Club were there.
Yes,
and
I was going to
they were saying that
there.
They would get in touch with us because they think we'd go down well there.
No, I think you would too.
From you yet.
No, but we'll see them at the Folk Festival.
Yeah, I know some people there as well. That was my recommendation to play there because I think you would go down well. It's a nice little Friday night club they do at the Golden Hind in Cambridge. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for coming in and chatting and playing for us. And congratulations on winning.
Thank you very much.
And no doubt you'll be involved in the competition again next year.
Oh, yes.
And website address and all that other stuff, people can find more information.
The website address, which then has got all the other contact details, is www.aintmisbehaving. That's all lowercase one word, but it's aintmisbehaving.
So ain't misbehaving without the G on there.
.co.uk.
Okay, that's
easy.
We're
on Facebook and Twitter.
But the links are all on the website.
Yeah, they're all on there.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you very much for coming in. It's been nice to meet you. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
It's now 5:30. It's 105 Drive. We've moved to Studio A because we have an interview to do. And it's quite cosy having three people next door, so I thought we'd give ourselves a bit more space. I'm joined by Eddie Copeland from the website commutingexpert.co.uk. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right. Welcome to the studio.
Good.
How did you get here?
How did I get here? I've actually been visiting my parents up in North Norfolk, so I commuted by car back to my house in Trumpington and then did the sensible Cambridge thing of cycling the rest of
Whereabouts
the
way. Whereabouts are your parents? Because my parents live in North Norfolk,
They're
too.
Just outside of Fakenham.
OK.
So, middle of nowhere, little village.
There you go.
Yes, not very much going on there.
All right, no, there isn't.
The nice part of the world.
I spent most of my life growing up there, so I know that all too well. Okay, now, this is a website that you and another friend of yours set up a couple of months ago.
This is right.
Commutingexpert.co.uk.
.com, in fact.
.com.
.co.uk will work as well, but it's .com.
Yeah. It is .com, you're right, I couldn't see it on my notes. So tell me about the backstory of this. You are a commuter yourself, you're both commuters.
So Matt Edwards and I, we both met at St Faith School many, many years ago, and we've gone our separate ways ever since. But more recently I've been working at the Purse and through that, looking after their alumni, basically. So driving hours and hours and hours right around the UK trying to get out and meet people. To encourage their support for the school, which has been great fun, but a lot of hours spent driving.
Okay.
Before that, I used to work for a company called Accenture, which is a big IT business consulting. So I was flying around the world all the time. And if you spend hour after hour after hour sitting in sort of departure lounges, if you're sitting on planes, so much wasted time. And then meanwhile, Matt has had the misfortune of having to commute from Audley End into London Liverpool Street and then on through the tube. And when you get anyone talking about commuting, and this is what we ended up doing in a pub about 6 months ago, the obvious thing you start doing is just complaining about it. People go, oh, God, the transport's unreliable, it gets more expensive, it's hot, there's never enough communication. And then in our sort of, because we're both optimists, we sort of sat there and thought, right, let's stop moaning because we're not old men just yet. Let's try and be constructive about this. And we just had a little bit of a brainstorm, you know, what are the best ideas? You know, what could you do to actually turn this vast amount of time that everyone is spending travelling to work longer and longer all the time into something a bit more productive? So we finally thought, let's come up with some ideas. Let's ask friends, ask colleagues. We found loads of good feedback and ideas and thought, right, let's stick it on a website and let's let other people contribute to it as well, share the best ideas.
This is a hot topic, isn't it? Particularly,
it is.
You know, if anybody commutes, they've always got a story to tell or a moan to have.
Yes.
And often when you're waiting for a train forever or you're having a journey that's not particularly pleasurable, you're sort of building up all these emotions inside of you, and I suppose when you start to talk to somebody else that's like-minded, you, as you say, you can chat for hours about it, and it's not very positive.
It's not, and the problem with commuting is that if you've ever sat on a train, if you've ever been on the tube, you notice there are several rules. You know, you don't smile, you don't make eye contact, and you never ever talk to your fellow passengers unless there's a delay, in which case people start chatting. But the problem is that because commuters tend to be very sort of siloed in their thinking and their behaviour, and you literally sort of switch off from the world just to sort of survive that time and make it your own, people don't naturally share ideas. They're not talking. But people are sitting there. If you look on a train, they're sitting on their phones, and we thought, well, there is clearly an avenue. There's a time that they could be sharing ideas, even if they're not talking to each other. Mm. But we looked at some statistics when we were coming up with the idea for the site and realised, you know, across the UK as a whole, the average UK worker spends 200 hours every year just commuting, so roughly so 25 full working days. If you commute into London, like Matt does, like I've done on occasion in the past, if you do that every day of the week for a whole year, you're clocking up, you know, north of 600 hours a year, and that's so much wasted time if you don't try and be proactive about it.
Yeah.
We're trying to turn it from that very negative side into something a little bit more productive.
So what sort of things does your website offer? I noticed it's got some links to mobile phone apps that people can download.
Well, exactly. There's, the more you look at that, the good thing is that the transport networks are at least, you know, adopting technology and actually making the data that they are collecting, and we're ahead of most other countries in this, and actually releasing it. So app developers can look at the data from trains, from Tube, from the Highways Agency, and actually make some really clever stuff with it. So if you go to London a lot, you can use, there's an app called City Mapper, where wherever you're standing, you can say, right, I need to get to this point, and it will give you all the sort of different combinations of route that you could take, how long it will take, the time it will take. If you're a driver, if you're here in Cambridge, you may have heard of an app called Waze, that's W-A-Z-E, which is kind of, if you'd combined a sat nav with social media, and so all the time it's sending signals, updating route instructions. Yeah. It's allowing people to add their own comments of roadblocks and inform each other, kind of as people call into the radio, but all done through the app, which cleverly reroutes everyone and keeps the transport networks going. So there's stuff like that which you just need to tell people about, and they can find really, really helpful.
Yeah, because something like that can make a huge difference to somebody's journey or life in general, I guess.
It does if you're stuck on the A14 or the M11 or one of our other sort of arterial roads coming, even, you know, it's focusing on here in Cambridge, then, you know, it really can make a big difference. Mm.
What do you make of Cambridge as a place to travel around in? By road, firstly.
By road, I mean, the thing with transport in Cambridge, full stop, is that the city is, quite frankly, a sort of victim of its own success.
Yeah,
and that
not enough space.
There isn't enough space. We're a sort of a historic city, and we've got, you know, growing population through one of the most successful hospitals in Western Europe. You've got one of the leading universities on the planet. Mm. You've got the science park. You've got the commuter belt. You've got some of the best schools in the entire country around here. It's a very, very desirable place to live. New towns with Camborne expanding, St. Ives,
etc. Just keep building houses,
it keeps going out,
and
the problem with all transport infrastructure is that they never build it with excess capacity. It's always catching up with population. And so I think for a lot of road users here in Cambridge, there's increasing frustration just because there's only so much you can do to roads like just out here in Gwydir Street or Mill Road, or you physically can't do anything, and hence they're having to be clever with public transport infrastructure.
Do you think the council's being quite proactive? I mean, there are quite a few projects that are on the go at the moment. Obviously, they're just about to start, or they are doing the crossroads in the Gonville Place around there. There's the talk of the A14 toll road. There's the talk of a new store. They are putting a new station at Chesterton for the trains. There are ideas, and they are doing them.
That's right.
A bit later than perhaps they should have been introduced in the first place. But do you think that sort of thing will make a big difference?
I think it should do. The problem is that as all of these new things come along, and I don't wish to sound sort of cynical about this, but you know, the population will expand to take on that new capacity. And I think our message to commuters is that it's great that councils, and the fact that central government as well, is realising that Cambridge specifically needs extra infrastructure. You know, the second railway, we've got the guided busway and things like that. The problem is that as population does grow in a desirable place like this, you are going to be stuck in traffic jams. You are going to have long train journeys. The new towns they're building are outside of Cambridge. So what you do need to do is actually look at the ways you can make your commute a more enjoyable and productive experience, unless you can afford, you know, have the luxury of living right here in the centre of town.
And your website's got some informative stuff on it as well. For example, I went to London a few weeks ago and got confused by the congestion charge. It sounds stupid, but actually it's quite easy to be confused about the congestion charge. I noticed there's a link on there for you to find out more information about that and to pay your congestion charge. And there's other links and things on there to websites with, as you say, the website that tells you how far it takes you to get to places and things in London, and general advice on there as well. But you're obviously wanting people to get involved with the website to share their own, perhaps they've got something they use or whatever.
Precisely. I mean, so the way we've split up the site is to say we've kind of got different categories. If anyone visits the desktop version of the site, there's a slightly different looking version for mobile. But we've split it up into sort of cheaper commuting, so your money-saving tips, and that's for whether you're using a bike, a car, a train, whatever that may be. There's lots of advice on there to save money on your commute if you're feeling a bit sort of penny-pinched just at the moment. There's sort of productive commuting. So what we're looking for is for people to let us know, you know, which universities offer distance learning courses. So I did an international relations master's while sitting on the train from London to Cambridge, or did the vast bulk of it that way. Or
that is productive.
People sit in their cars and you can listen to, you know, there's incredible stuff from Audible, the Amazon company. So any book you want, don't sit in the car listening to a lesser radio station than this, wonderful one. You can actually be churning through great volumes and educating yourself through iTunes U. They've got lecture series from some of the top universities in the world. They're free. Like, download them, listen to them when you're, you know, in the car or on the train. So there's productive things. And, you know, what's the best laptop to use whilst you're commuting? Again, Matt and I don't know the answer to all these questions, but if commuters out there can get on the site, can comment on the social network saying, found this app, it was amazing, or found this website, great resources. Mm. There's enjoyable commuting as well. So we did a review on what are the best mobile-optimised sites for going shopping. So when you're sitting on the train, it's astonishing how many companies haven't invested in a decent site that works on your mobile well, but at least there are a growing number that have, and so we've had a look at those. And then we look at, for those who actually hate their commutes, who will nothing will ever be enough for them, how do you escape it or reduce it? And so everything from advice from negotiating a work remote working agreement with your employer.
Okay.
To, you know, what if you want to be slightly entrepreneurial and mad, like Matt and I have been, and try and
just
set up
ditch your
venture.
Job and do something else.
Ditch your job and try something completely
That's
different.
That's quite an extreme solution for getting away from commuting, but people do it, don't they?
They do, and some people do it successfully. We hope we will as well. But the fact is, there are some very, very good organisations out there now, which, if you've got the right idea, can actually help you and increase your chances of success. So we cover those as well. So under those broad kind of banners, if people out there do have ideas listening, then we would encourage them, get on the site and share them so that we can review them and write about them.
So it's been going a couple of months. What's the reception been to it so far?
Well, so it's been good so far. So we were lucky that Stephen Fry caught hold of it and tweeted it to his 5.8 million followers. So Matt and I woke up one day and suddenly saw a whole barrage of emails in our inbox, which was brilliant. We're in the process at the moment. The problem with a new web startup is when you don't have the marketing budget and you're trying to say, guys, there's a website here, come and have a look at it. And so we're at the moment, we're in the process of just getting out, talking to as many people as we can, coming to talk to, you know, people like you on this radio station, to be able to share the idea. And for some people it'll resonate, other people will take a bit of more persuading to, because as I said, there is that negativity about commuting, and it actually can take a little bit of nurturing for people to think, right, no, let's be productive and let's think about this in a positive light. But we've had a great reception from things like transport companies have been very, very helpful. Transport for London have been sort of bending over backwards to help us set up interviews with key people and share their information. The Mayor's Office, Boris Johnson, knows about the site and has sort of sent us encouraging text messages to keep going. We're meeting his deputy for transport next week. We've been talking to the sort of industry rail magazines and obviously to MPs. So Julian Huppert, we went to see even before we launched the site, and again, phenomenally supportive. So we're confident that we can take it somewhere.
Wow. Well, good luck with it. It's an interesting topic. I'm glad I got the interview, because I was saying earlier, I'm a little bit of a transport geek in that I quite like trains and planes and things like that. So
how do you commute?
I don't need to commute, really, because I live in Camborne. So the road between here and Camborne is fine, really.
That's not bad.
I was, when I first joined here, I was coming on the train all the time from King's Lynn down to Cambridge. But I didn't really have too many problems with the trains. But my dad spent a long time commuting, and he got fed up commuting between King's Lynn and London all the time. But I think things are improving slowly. But as you say, there are certainly people out there that spend a lot of time, i.e. waiting for things or not spending their time on the train, even if it's going at the speed they want it to go, to doing something more productive about
Precisely.
It. As you say, it's dead time. Just sitting there staring out the window sometimes is nice, but it's not really productive. And
there's an alternative if you want it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, so the website again is commutingexpert.com, and you can go there. And you said there's a forum that people can get in touch with you. Do they have to log in and set up an account?
So at the moment, you don't have to log in or do anything. Right. Everything is available to any visitor.
Just comment.
What we're encouraging people to at the moment is to comment on specific articles. Yep. They can sign up for an e-newsletter where we invite them to send suggestions. There was a forum, but until we built, you know, a real solid body of traffic, we took that down, because there's nothing worse than seeing sort of empty forum posts. So we will be reintroducing that as figures grow. The best way to let us know at the moment, they can contact us through the site if they've got ideas, or just, you know, follow us on Twitter, or join up on Facebook or on Google Plus and LinkedIn as well. And that's a really, really easy way. We're monitoring it all the time and can respond to feedback. Most of our articles are driven by user suggestions, so if you know of something good, if you know whether it's for Cambridge, London, anywhere else, get in touch. We'd love to hear from
you. So this is your side project at the moment, but you want it to become your job in the future, I guess.
I don't, well, this is, I've given up the last job.
Oh,
so
okay.
I've had a wonderful 4.5 years working for the Purse, who've been very, very good to me. But I figured that if this is going to work at all, I need to chuck myself into it full time. So if you tweeted us, either Matt and I will be there, we'll know about it. So we certainly hope it's going to work.
All right, we'll say good luck with it. And if you have any developments and things you want to tell us about in the future, please do come back.
Then we'll be back.
That's,
thank you.
Eddie Copeland from the commutingexpert.com website. Cheers.
Right now it's 5:30 and I'm very pleased to say that my guest joining me this afternoon is Vivian Watson. She is from the Cambridge Toy Shop. So a very good afternoon to you, Vivian. Enjoying the lovely weather at the moment?
Hello, it's lovely. Certainly warm in here.
It certainly is. I hope it isn't too unbearable for you.
No.
So tell us a little bit about the history behind the Cambridge Toy Shop for people who aren't familiar with it.
Right. Well, the Toy Shop was actually launched 9.5 years ago now by three local mums. And we were in a small location to start with, but 3.5 years ago I moved round to a nice, really lovely central location in a pedestrian area, and we've got two floors of toys, so it's very well located for locals and for tourists.
And you're on Sussex Street, aren't you?
We are, Sussex Street, yes.
And how's the store managing in the poor financial climate at the moment? Are people tending to go to the bigger supermarkets to buy toys, or are they still going to the local sort of cosmopolitan stores as well?
I think there's a big drive at the moment to support independence in Cambridge, and so we seem to be doing very well from that. We have had to focus very strongly on getting everything right in the shop, so we've focused a lot on our service. We've got lots of mums work in the shop, so they've got a lot of knowledge about the toys. People like to get information about what they're buying. The internet, I think, is a bit of a trend that's going now, because people still like to look and touch what they're going to buy. We've also got a lot of young people work at the shop, and they're great fun. They make it fun for everyone there. They're very in touch with the latest toys. Also, we've got a fantastic range. We've got over 9,000 products in stock, so there's something there. You'd be hard pushed not to find something if you came in, and it's for all ages, really.
I have to admit, I looked on your website, I saw some kites on there. Very summer friendly.
Oh, kites are one of my favourites, actually. That's on my wish list for my holiday. I'm going to get myself a nice big parafoil stunt kite.
Fantastic stuff. And you've recently won an award. Tell us a little bit about this.
We did. That was an award that our local MP, Julian Huppert, presented to us, and it was for Best Independent Shop for Children. I have to say, there aren't many independent shops for children in Cambridge, but what was really nice for us were the things that people said when they put us forward for the award, so we did get a lot of compliments.
So when did you sort of apply to get to be in the line for this award? Was it something that was done over the past couple of months? Or
yeah, it's a monthly award. They look at different independent shops in different sectors, and we were in the one for June.
Wonderful stuff. Have you got your big certificate up on the wall now?
We have. It's framed. It's framed, yes. And we've just found out that we've got another accolade from one of our trade papers, which is Toy News, which a lot of my suppliers rang up to congratulate me, because they came to do a mystery shop in Cambridge. And we were the star shop, 5 out of 5. We beat all the competitions. So
funny enough, I do some mystery shopping, but it wasn't me who gave you the 5 stars, unfortunately. I probably would have done if I'd have gone in there. But going back to sort of items that you sell, we've touched upon kites. What other products do you sell for someone who may be looking to get a gift for a child who's celebrating a birthday or something like that?
Right, we do focus a lot on having presents that are a very medium price range, because mums say that their children get invited to so many parties, so they're looking for something between the £5 and £8 mark. We have everything, really. It's from one end of the spectrum to the other. We have fun snaps at 50p, which are the one of our biggest selling toys, and whoopee cushions, right up to very special Merry Thought English made bears for a special birthday, or for older boys we've got the new Lego architecture range, so you can recreate the Burj Al Arab or the Empire State Building. So
very
fantastic
exciting
range. Yes.
If I was a kid, I'm sure I'd be still using Lego and things like that. And obviously obviously there's the big kids as well, there's the adults, the grown-ups.
Yep.
Do they come in and buy whoopee cushions and things like that?
They do, and dads are coming in regularly to buy Airfix kits, so it's the good old fashioned things that are going well. And one of our biggest lines at the moment is our new juggling range. We've got a professional juggling range, so we have all different types of juggling balls, Diablos, poise, hula hoops, all sorts of things. Fantastic range, and we've got videos playing in the shop showing people how to use them, and they can buy videos to take away. DVDs, I should say.
Would you say that programmes like Britain's Got Talent encourage people to go to toy shops and buy things when they see people juggling and doing things like that?
They might do. Juggling is really a big craze at the moment in the playground. I think collecting things was a craze a while ago, but that ran into all sorts of problems for schools with little collectibles trading hands. So now I think juggling's popular, sport is becoming more key in all schools, and juggling's great because it uses both sides of the brain, so it's very good. Parents like it as well as the children.
And do you sell yo-yos and things like that? I remember when I was at school, yo-yos sort of came back big style with clutches in and things like that to make them go and spin. Do you still sell things like that?
We do. Again, we've got everything from a little wooden yo-yo, £1.50 for a small child to start with, up to the really professional ones, lovely gold metallic ones, which have the gears and all that. So you can do all the different string tricks, looping tricks, everything.
Brilliant stuff. And do you get people coming in? We've touched upon, obviously, gifts for children. Do you get parents coming in to buy things for party bags and bits and pieces like that?
Yes, we've got a big section of pocket money. So, again, anything from 30p upwards. And we sell the party bags and balloons so people can get geared up totally for a party in the shop.
Brilliant. Going back to the sort of the history of the store, it's now two floors, am I right in saying?
Yes, that's right, yes.
When you expanded, was that a big thing, a big moment for the store?
It was, yes, it was a big thing. The shop's now twice the size it was, so it was quite a big leap, especially as we were in a recession at that time. But the shop we had before had become very popular, and it's almost a Cambridge institution now. I've got people working at the shop who used to come and buy when they were children, and so they loved it, and we felt it was really time to expand. We could only stock about 60% of what we really wanted to stock. There's so many great toys available, new toys as well as all the old traditional things, so we felt that we just needed more room.
Do you have lots of staff? Is it quite a few staff?
We do. It ranges from 12 to up to about 22 at Christmas, yes. So people working all sorts of hours. I have one lad, actually, who's been with me since we opened. So he's been working for me for 10 years.
A long time.
He's at university now, but he still works there.
He's one of the bigger kids.
Yes.
And just touching upon where you're situated, if someone isn't familiar around Cambridge, you're situated on Sussex Street. Are you sort of near a big sort of landmark or anywhere like that?
Yes, for tourists, the open-top bus stops just outside in Hobson Street. But as we say on all our marketing stuff, we're just a hop, skip and a jump from the Market Square. So we're not far. We're around the corner from Waterstones and Next.
And you've got a brilliant website. I've been on that. I absolutely love the font on the website, and it's very jazzy and fun. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, that was the font and the logos were designed when we first started the shop, and we wanted something very recognisable. And that's worked very well on our packaging and signage in the shop and on the website. And the website, we did have a little spell where we used to sell online, but really that's a whole separate business, and I don't think I'm in the market to compete with Amazon. What we are very good at is having a big range of products. We couldn't possibly put them all on a website, and we're very good at helping customers find specific things they want. So what we do now is we give a flavour of our shop on the website, and people are invited to ring or email us if there's something particular they're looking for, and we will do a personal shopping service and then send it out to them. And we've just signed up with Outspoken Deliveries, and we're going to have our own Cambridge Toy Shop bike
the cycle courier company.
So they're going to be delivering for us. And we particularly wanted to be able to deliver up to Adam Brooks.
Well, that really is brilliant. And you touched upon earlier that people, when they go into a shop, they like a personal shopping experience. Do you sort of give that in your store still?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. We've got lots of grandparents coming in who aren't really sure what's the latest thing. They can't remember what it was they gave their children. Particularly for parties, mums are saying to us, well, what's the latest thing, what would be good but not too expensive. And we get an awful lot of tourists in as well, so we're recommending things, they're looking for things that are British.
indeed, yes. Especially with the royal baby on the way
yes,
as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And if someone wants to find out more information now, we've touched on the website itself, but we haven't given out the website address yet. What is that?
That is www.cambridgetoyshop.co.uk.
And if someone wants to give the store a call, do you have a phone number?
Yes, it's 01223 309010.
And I must admit, your email address is very simple, inquiries@cambridgetoyshop.co.uk.
That's right.
Brilliant stuff. So that's Vivian Watson coming in to talk about the Cambridge Toy Shop. Thank you very much. It's been fascinating to have an insight into your store, the history behind it, and obviously congratulations on winning that prestigious local award as well.
Thank you.
Brilliant stuff. It's Cambridge 105. Stay tuned. More great things on the way shortly.
There was a time when I would go walking backwards round the world if you said you're mine. And I'd run blindfold down the King's Road Monday morning if you just for once arrive on time. But you turned into another layer and
telling you now, I quit.
Radio in your city, in the sunshine. We are Cambridge 105 on this Wednesday afternoon. It's Matt Webb driving you home all the way through until 7 o'clock this evening. And my thanks go to Vivian Watson for propping in. She was from the Cambridge Toy Shop. If you want to find out more information about the items that they sell and more about the store itself, you can go over to www.cambridgetoyshop.co.uk. You can email them inquiries@cambridgetoyshop.co.uk, or you can call them for more information on 01223 309010.